Support for the Morning Show comes from the Carthage College Office of Continuing Studies, providing graduate and accelerated certification programs in education to start or advance a career in teaching. Convenient evening and summer courses are designed for the working adult. More information available at carthage.edu/grad. Support also comes from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911. A unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe. Andrea's, 2401 60th Street, online at andreasgifts.com. And we welcome you to the Friday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. On today's program, part two of UW Parkside's production of A Christmas Carol on the Air. At the end of the hour, you will hear a brief excerpt from my most memorable Morning Show conversation with the legendary Weston Noble, who passed away the day before yesterday.
In just a moment, we will return you to this evening's presentation. But first...
What cigarette do you smoke, Doctor?
That question was asked a few years ago of 113,597 doctors. The brand named most was Camel. Recently, that question was again asked of tens of thousands of doctors across the country, doctors in all branches of medicine. And again, the brand named most was Camel. Yes, according to these nationwide surveys, more doctors smoke Camels than any other cigarette. Friends, smoke this cigarette so many doctors enjoy. Change to Camels for 30 days and see how mild, how flavorable, how enjoyable a cigarette can be. Yes, change to Camels for 30 days and you'll stay with Camels from then on.
How mild, how mild, how mild can a cigarette be? Take the Camels 30-day test and you'll see.
Smoke Camels and see.
We return you now to A Christmas Carol, a present to you for the makers of fine soap and cigarettes for men and women. We find Ebenezer Scrooge clinging to the mighty robe of the Ghost of Christmas Present.
Please, Spirit, tell me there is some hope for Tiny Tim. Is there no way?
What then? If he be like to die, he had better do it and decrease the surplus population.
No peeking, Tom!
What was that? Where?
Another house. Don't let go of that robe, Ebenezer.
Spirit, look! It's my nephew! It's Fred!
Here is a new game.
Oh, let us stay here a while, Spirit. Please, if only for 1/2 hour. Only one.
It is a game called Yes and No, where I have to think of something and the rest of you must find out what. But I may only answer to your questions yes or no. What do you say, Topper?
Is it an old cow?
No.
A dog?
No.
A bear?
No.
But is it an animal?
Yes.
An ass.
Well, yes. But no.
Is it a disagreeable animal? That is to say, a savage animal?
Yes, rather.
Does it growl?
Yes.
And grunt?
Sometimes.
It is a bear.
No.
Well, is it made a show of in the menagerie or the circus?
No.
A bull! It's a bull! Is it killed in the market?
No. Sorry, Torpa.
Not killed in the market, eh? Maybe,
I found it out! I know what it is, Fred. I know what it is.
What is it?
It's your Uncle Scrooge!
And it most certainly is!
Well.
And he has given us plenty of merriment, I am sure.
Oh, that he has. And it would be ungrateful not to drink his health. Here is a glass of mulled wine, and I say, Uncle Scrooge!
To Uncle Scrooge!
A Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year to the old man. Whatever he is.
I'm sure he is very rich, Fred. At least you always tell me so.
Oh, what of that? His wealth is of no use to him. Oh, he doesn't do any good with it. He doesn't make himself comfortable with it.
I have no patience for him.
Indeed.
Oh, I have. Oh, I couldn't be angry with him if I tried. I am sorry for him.
But how can you be, Fred? Every year you invite him to dine with us, and every year he refuses. He's clearly taken it into his head to dislike us.
Oh, well, I mean to give him the same chance every year, whether he likes it or not. He may rail at Christmas till he dies, but I defy him to not think better of it if he finds me going there in good temper year after year and saying, Uncle Scrooge, how are you? If it only puts him in the vein to leave his poor clerk £50, that's something. And I think I shook him yesterday. As I live, he said that Christmas was a humbug.
Please, Spirit, let us stay in this place. At least for dessert.
My time here is short.
And Scrooge and the Spirit were again upon their travels. Much they saw, and far they went, and many homes they visited, but always with a happy end. The Spirit stood beside sick beds, and they were cheerful. On foreign lands, and they were close at home. By struggling men, and they were patient in their greater hope. In misery's every refuge, where vain man, in his little brief authority, had not made fast the door and barred the Spirit out, he left his blessing and taught Scrooge his precepts. And now, without a word of warning, he bade Scrooge hold his robe, and passing on above a moor, sped whither?
To sea!
To sea?
To Scrooge's horror, looking back, he saw the last of the land fading behind them, and his ears were deafened by the thundering of water as it rolled and roared and raged among the dreadful caverns it had worn.
Built upon a dismal reef of sunken rocks, some league or so from shore, there stood a solitary lighthouse. Great heaps of seaweed clung to its base, and storm birds rose and fell about it like the great waves they skimmed.
But even here, two men who watched the light had made a fire that through the loophole in the thick stone wall shed out a ray of brightness on the awful sea. Joining their gnarled hands over the rough table at which they sat, they wished each other Merry Christmas and their can of grog. And one of them, the elder too, with his face all damaged and scarred with hard weather as the figurehead of an old ship might be, struck up a sturdy song that was like a gale in itself. It was a long night, if it were only a single night, but Scrooge had his doubts of this, because the Christmas holidays appeared to be condensed into the space of time they passed together. It was strange, too, that while Scrooge remained unaltered in his outward form, the ghost grew older, clearly older. Scrooge had observed this change, but never spoke of it, until they left a children's Twelfth Night party when looking at the spirit as they stood together in an open place.
Oh, Spirit! Your hair is entirely grey.
My life upon this globe is very brief.
Our spirit's life so short.
Mine ends tonight.
Tonight?
Tonight at midnight. Hark! The chimes are ringing the 3/4 past the hour, and the time is drawing near.
Forgive me if I'm not justified in what I ask, but I see something strange and not belonging to yourself protruding from your skirts. Is it a foot or a claw?
It might be a claw, for all the flesh there is upon it. Look here.
Oh, Spirit! How hideous! How miserable!
From the foldings of its robe, it brought 2 children, wretched, abject, and frightful. They knelt down at its feet and clung upon the outside of its garment.
Aye, man! Look here! Look down here!
They were a boy and girl. Yellow, meager, ragged, scowling, wolfish, but prostrate too in their humility. Where graceful youth should have filled their features out and touched them with its freshest tints, a stale and shriveled hand like that of age had pinched and twisted them and pulled them into shreds. Where angels might have sat enthroned, devils lurked and glared out menacingly.
Spirit, are they yours?
They are mine, and they cling to me, appealing from their fathers. This boy is ignorance. This girl is want. Beware them both and all of their degree, but most of all, beware ignorance. For on his forehead I see written that which is doom. Unless the writing be erased, deny it. Slander those who tell it ye. Admit it for your factious purposes and make it worse.
Have they no refuge or resource? Spirit? Spirit! Where are you?
Are there no presents? Are there no workhouses?
Scrooge looked about him for the ghost, and saw it not. As the last stroke ceased to vibrate, he remembered the prediction of old Jacob Marley, and lifting up his eyes, beheld a solemn phantom, draped and hooded, coming like a mist along the ground towards him.
In just a moment, we will return you to this evening's presentation of Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol. But first,
the smart question, the smooth answer.
What do you have?
Pabst Blue Ribbon. What'll you have?
Pabst Blue Ribbon.
When a waitress glides up to your place with a pretty smile upon her face, here's a way to really romance her. Give her that Pabst Blue Ribbon answer. What'll you have?
Pabst Blue Ribbon.
What'll you have?
Pabst Blue Ribbon.
What'll you have?
Pabst Blue Ribbon.
Pabst Blue Ribbon beer.
Smoother, smoother, smoother flavor. Zest and sparkle, millions favor. Taste that smoother, smoother flavor.
Pabst Blue Ribbon beer.
Finest beer served anywhere. Pabst Blue Ribbon. Prove it yourself with a three-way expert's test. 1. Your eyes are pleased with that blue ribbon clearness and sparkle. 2. Your nose is teased with the aroma of blue ribbon hops. 3. Your taste agrees.
Finest beer served anywhere.
Pabst Blue Ribbon beer.
What do you have?
Pabst Blue Ribbon.
We now return to Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol.
Held before him a solemn phantom, draped and hooded, coming like a mist along the ground towards him. The phantom slowly, gravely, silently approached. When it came near him, Scrooge bent down upon his knee, for in the very air through which this spirit moved, it seemed to scatter gloom and mystery.
It was shrouded in a deep black garment, which concealed its head, its face, its form, and left nothing of it visible, save one outstretched hand. But for this, it would have been difficult to detach its figure from the night and separate it from the darkness by which it was surrounded. He felt that it was tall and stately when it came beside him, and that its mysterious presence filled him with a solemn dread. He knew no more, for the spirit neither spoke nor moved.
I am in the presence of the ghost of Christmas yet to come. The spirit answered not, but pointed onward with its hand. You are about to show me the shadows of things that have not yet happened, but will happen in the time before us. Is that so, spirit?
Although well used to ghostly company by this time, Scrooge feared the silent shape so much that his legs trembled beneath him. It thrilled him with a vague, uncertain horror to know that behind the dusky shroud, there were ghostly eyes intently fixed upon him, while he, though he stretched his own to the utmost, could see nothing but a spectral hand and one great heap of black.
Ghost of the future, I fear you more than any spectre I have seen. But as I know your purpose is to do me good, and as I hope to live to be another man from what I was, I am prepared to bear you company and do it with a thankful heart. Will you not speak to me? It gave him no reply. The hand was pointed straight before them. Lead on, lead on. The night is waning fast, and it is precious time to me, I know. Lead on, spirit. The city seemed to spring up about them and encompass them of its own act. But there they were, in the heart of the city, amongst the merchants, who hurried up and down, chinked the money in their pockets, and looked at their watches. Scrooge knew each of these men perfectly. They were men of business, very wealthy, and of great importance. He had made a point always of standing well in their esteem.
In a business point of view, that is.
Oh, yes. Strictly in a business point of view.
Oh, I thought he'd never die.
I don't know much about it either way. I only know he's dead.
Well, well, old Scrat has got his own at last, eh? When did he die?
Last night, I believe.
Why? What was the matter with him?
God knows.
What has he done with his money?
I haven't heard.
Left it to his company, I suppose.
He hasn't left it to me, that's all I know.
It's likely to be a very cheap funeral.
Oh, most certainly.
But upon my life, I don't know of anybody to go to it.
Well, I don't mind going if a lunch is provided.
Oh, it's cold, isn't it?
Well, it's seasonable for Christmas.
Oh, indeed. You're not a skater, I suppose.
Oh, no, no.
Spirit, your hand continues to point at these men. But I'm inclined to be surprised you should attach importance to a conversation so trivial. Is there no explanation? Some hidden purpose? Perhaps these men speak of the death of Jacob Marley? But that cannot be, for that is the past, and your province is the future. Well, there's no doubt that whomsoever these men apply, they have some latent moral for my own improvement. And I resolve to treasure up every word I've heard with you tonight. And especially to carefully observe the shadow of myself when it appears. No doubt seeing the conduct of my future self will give me the clue that I'm missing.
They left the busy scene and went into an obscure part of town where Scrooge had never penetrated before, although he recognized its situation and its bad repute. The ways were foul and narrow, the shops and houses wretched, the people half-naked, drunken, slipshod, ugly. Alleys and archways, like so many cesspools, disgorged the offences of smell and dirt and life upon the straggling streets, and the whole quarter reeked with crime, with filth and misery.
Far in this den of infamous resort, there was a low-browed beetling shop where old rags, bottles, bones, and greasy offal were bought. Upon the floor within were piled up heaps of rusty keys, hinges, files, weights, and refuse iron of all kinds.
Secrets that few would like to scrutinize were bred and hidden in the mountains of unseemly rags, masses of corrupted fat, and sepulchres of bones.
Sitting in among the wares he dealt in was a gray-haired rascal, nearly 70 years of age. He had screened himself from the cold air without by a frowsy curtaining of miscellaneous tatters, and sat smoking his pipe in all the luxury of calm retirement.
You couldn't have met in a better place. Come into the parlour. Did I well stop till I shut the door of the shop? Oh, how it squeaks. There aren't such a rusty bit of metal in the place as its own hinges, I believe. And I'm sure there's no such old bones here as mine. Oh, we're all suitable to our calling. We're well matched. Come into the parlour. Come into the parlour.
The parlour was the space behind the screen of rags.
I ain't staying long. Here's the bundle.
Don't stand there as if you was afraid, woman. Who's the wiser? Every person has a right to take care of themselves. He always did.
Ah, that's true indeed, no man more so. And who's the worse for loss of a few things like these? Not a dead man, I suppose.
If he wanted to keep them after he was dead, wicked old screw, why wasn't he natural in his lifetime? If he had been, he'd have had somebody to look after him when he was struck with death, instead of lying gasping out his last air alone by himself.
It's the truest word that ever was spoke. It's a judgment on him.
Oh, I wish it was a little heavier judgment.
It should have been, you may depend upon it. If I could have put my hands on anything else. Open that bundle, old Joe, and let me know the value of it. Speak up, Lane. I'm not afraid. It's no sin. Open a bundle, Joe.
Let's see. Towels, a pair of sleeve buttons, a pair of sugar tongs, a boot.
They're more in there. All pairs, and some what have never been worn.
What do you call this?
Bed curtains.
Bed curtains? Oh, you don't mean to say you took them down, ringed it all with him lying there?
Yes, I do. Why not? It's no sin.
You were born to make your fortune, and you'll certainly do it.
I certainly shan't hold still my hand when I can get anything in it by reaching out for the sakes of such a man. Don't drop that oil on the blankets now.
His blankets?
Whose else do you think? He ain't likely to take hold without my dare say.
Oh, I hope you didn't die of anything catching, eh?
Don't you be afraid of that. I ain't so fond of his company that I'd loiter about for such things if he did. You may look through that shirt till your eyes ache, but you won't find a hole in it. No threadbare plates. It's the best he had. They'd have wasted it if it hadn't been for me.
What do you call wasting of it?
Putting it on him to be buried in, to be sure. Somebody was fool enough to do it, but I took it off again. He can't look uglier than he did in that one. Nah, Joe, how much for the whole lot?
I always give too much to ladies. It's a weakness of mine, and that's the way I ruin myself. Yeah.
Oh.
That's your account. If you asked me for another penny, I'd repent of being so liberal and knock off half a crown.
Oh. Oh, this is the end of it, you see. He frightened everyone away from him while he was alive to profit us when he was dead.
Spinet. Oh, Spinet. I see now. The case of this unhappy man might be my own. My life tends that way now.
He recoiled in terror, for the scene had changed, and now he almost touched a bed. A bare, uncurtained bed, on which beneath a ragged sheet there lay an awful, silent something covered up.
Merciful heaven, what is this? A pale light, rising in the outer air, fell straight upon the bed, and on it, plundered and bereft, unwatched, unwept, uncared for, was the body of a man. Is this... Yes, Spirit, this must be the body of the man in question. Is it so? If he could be raised up now, what would be his foremost thoughts? Avarice, hard-dealing, griping cares? He lies in a dark, empty house with not a man, a woman, or a child to say he was kind to me and this or that. What does that sound? Something tearing at the door. Rats. Gnawing rats beneath the hearthstone. What they want in this room of death, and why they are so restless and disturbed, I dare not to think. Spirit, this is a fearful place. In leaving it, I shall not leave its lesson. Trust me. Let us go.
Scrooge glanced towards the phantom. Its steady hand was pointed to the head of the figure under the sheet. The cover was so carelessly adjusted that the slightest raising of it, the motion of a finger upon Scrooge's part, would have disclosed the face.
He thought of it, felt how easy it would be to do, and longed to do it, but had no more power to withdraw the veil than to dismiss the spectre at his side. Still, the ghost pointed at it with an unmoved finger.
I understand you, Spirit, and I would do it if I could. But I have not the power to look under that sheet, Spirit. I have not the power. Is there any person in the town who feels emotion caused by this man's death? Show that person to me, Spirit. I beseech you.
What is this place? Who is this woman? She seems awfully young to be so careworn.
Hello, darling.
Hello, Caroline.
Come, sit by the fire. Well?
Well.
Is it good or bad?
Bad.
We are quite ruined.
No, there is hope yet, Caroline.
If he relents, there is. Nothing is past hope if such a miracle were to occur.
He is past relenting.
Oh, no.
He is dead.
God forgive me, but I am thankful in my soul to hear it.
What I thought was a mere excuse to avoid me on my last visit turns out to have been quite true. He was not only very ill, but dying.
And now? To whom will our debt be transferred?
I don't know. But before that time, we shall be ready with the money. And even though we were not, it would be a bad fortune indeed so to find so merciless a creditor and a successor.
Oh, darling.
We may sleep tonight with light hearts, Caroline.
The only emotion you can show me, caused by death, is one of pleasure? Is this a mortal thought, Spirit? Is there no compassion for us in death? Let me see some tenderness connected with death, or that dark chamber will be forever prison to me.
The ghost conducted him through several streets familiar to his feet,
and as they went along, Scrooge looked here and there to find himself, but nowhere was he to be seen. They entered poor Bob Cratchit's house, the dwelling he had visited before, and found the mother and the children seated round the fire. Quiet. Very quiet. The noisy little Cratchits were as still as statues in one corner and sat looking up at Peter, who had a book before him. The mother and her daughters were engaged in sewing, but surely they were very quiet.
Mother,
the sewing hurts my eyes. It makes them weak by candlelight.
I know, Mother.
They're better now again. And I wouldn't show weak eyes to your father when he comes home for the world. It must be near his time.
Past it, rather. But I think he's walked a little slower than he used these last few evenings.
I've known him walk with Tiny Tim upon his shoulder. Very fast, indeed.
And so have I.
But he was very light to carry. And his father loved him so. That was no trouble. No trouble.
And there is Father at the door.
Father!
Bob, come in, dear. Your tea is ready for you on the hob.
Let me take your comforter, Father.
Thank you, Martha. My, but look at your sewing. You and your mother have been very industrious indeed. At this rate, you'll be done long before Sunday.
Sunday? You went today then, Bob?
Yes, my dear. I wish you could have gone. It would have done you good to see how green a place it is. But you'll see it often. I promised him that I would walk there on a Sunday. My little, little child. My little child.
Martha, get the tea.
Father.
Thank you, Peter. I'm sorry, dears. Believe me when I say that I am reconciled to what happened, and I'm truly quite content. It just seemed that at that particular moment I couldn't help it.
If you could have helped it, you and Tim would be farther apart, perhaps, than you are.
Very true, my dear. Now, let us draw about the fire and talk.
Here's your tea, Father.
Thank you, Martha. Now, let me tell you of the extraordinary kindness of Mr. Scrooge's nephew.
Mr. Scrooge's nephew?
I've scarcely seen him but once. But meeting him in the street today, he saw that I looked a little... well, just a little down, you know. Well, he inquired what happened to distress me, on which I told him, for he is the pleasantest spoken gentleman you ever heard. I am heartily sorry for it, Mr. Cratchit, he said, and heartily sorry for your good wife.
Bless him.
How he ever knew that, I don't know.
Knew what, my dear?
Why, that you were a good wife.
Why, everybody knows that.
Very well observed, Peter.
I hope they do.
Heartily sorry, he said, for your good wife. If I can be of service to you in any way, he said, giving me his card, that's where I live. Pray, come to me.
How very kind.
It was quite delightful. Not for the sake of anything he might be able to do for us, so much as for his kind way. It really seemed as if he had known our Tiny Tim and felt with us.
I'm sure he's a good soul.
You would be surer of it, my dear, if you saw and spoke to him. I shouldn't be at all surprised, mark what I say, if he got Peter a better situation.
Only hear that, Peter.
Really, Father?
Oh, and then Peter will be keeping company with some pretty one and be setting up for himself.
Oh, get along with him.
There's plenty of time for that, my dear. But however, and whenever we part from one another, I am sure we shall none of us forget poor Tiny Tim, shall we? Or this first parting that there was among us?
Never, Robert.
Never, Father.
And I know, my dears, that when we recollect how patient and how mild he was, although he was a little, little child, we shall not quarrel easily among ourselves and forget poor Tiny Tim in doing it.
No, not for the world, Daddy.
And now a toast. Spirit of Tiny Tim, thy childish essence was from God.
Spectre, something informs me that our parting moment is at hand. I know it, but I know not how. Please, let me behold what I shall be in days to come.
The ghost of Christmas yet to come conveyed him as before into the resorts of bankers and businessmen, but showed him not himself.
This court, past which you hurry now, is where my place of occupation is, and has been for a length of time. Spirit, I see my house. Why did we pass by?
When at last the spirit came to a stop, it was just inside a large iron gate.
The churchyard?
The spirit stood among the graves and pointed down to one.
Scrooge advanced towards it, trembling. The phantom was exactly as it had been, but he dreaded that he saw new meaning in its solemn shape.
Before I draw near to that stone to which you point, answer me one question. Are these the shadows of the things that will be, or are they the shadows of the things that may be only?
Still, the ghost pointed downward to the grave by which it stood.
Men's courses will foreshadow certain ends, to which, if persevered in, they must lead. But if the courses be departed from, the ends will change. Say it to us with what you show me.
The spirit was immovable as ever.
Scrooge crept towards it, trembling as he went, and following the finger up, he read upon the stone of the neglected grave,
Ebenezer Scrooge. Am I that man who lay upon the bed? No, spirit. Oh, no, no. Hear me. I am not the man I was. I will not be the man I must have been for this intercourse. Why show me this if I am past all hope?
For the first time, the hand appeared to shake.
Good spirit, I fall before you. Your nature intercedes for me and pities me. Assure me that I may yet change these shadows you have shown me by an altered life.
The kind hand trembled.
Oh, tell me I may sponge away the writing on this stone.
In his agony, Scrooge caught the spectral hand. It sought to free itself, but he was strong in his entreaty and detained it. Scrooge noticed an alteration in the phantom's hood and dress.
It shrunk, collapsed, and dwindled down into a bedpost.
Yes, and the bedpost was his own. The room was his own. The bed was his own.
Best and happiest of all, the time before him was his own to make amends in.
And he knew it.
Yes! I will live in the past, the present, and the future. The spirits of all three shall strive within me. Oh, Jacob Marley, heaven and the Christmas time be praised for this. I say it on my knees, oh Jacob, on my knees. Ha, my bed curtains. They're not torn down. They're not torn down, rings and all. They are here. I am here. The shadows of the things that would have been may be dispelled. They will be. I know they will.
His hands were busy with his garments all this time, turning them inside out, putting them on upside down, tearing them, mislaying them, making them parties to every kind of extravagance.
I don't know what to do. I'm as light as a feather. I'm as happy as an angel. I'm as merry as a schoolboy. I'm as giddy as a drunken man. A merry Christmas to everybody. A happy new year to the whole world.
He had frisked into the sitting room and was now standing there, perfectly winded.
There's the saucepan that my gruel was in. There's the door by which the ghost of Jacob Marley entered. There's the corner where the ghost of Christmas present sat. There's the window where I saw the wandering spirits. It's all right. It's all true. It all happened.
Really, for a man who had been out of practice for so many years, it was a splendid laugh, a most illustrious laugh, the father of a long, long line of brilliant laughs.
I don't know what day of the month it is. I don't know how long I've been among the spirits. I don't know anything. I'm quite a baby. Never mind. I don't care. I'd rather be a baby. Oh, bells! I must open the window.
Hello there, Maddy Bells! Yes, yes. Clash, clang, hammer, ding. I know. Ding, dong, hammer, clash, clang. Oh, glorious, glorious! The lustiest bells I've ever heard. No fog, no mist. Clear, bright, jovial, stirring. Cold. Cold, piping for the blood to dance to. Golden sunlight, heavenly sky, sweet fresh air. Oh, glorious, glorious!
Whoop! Ow! Hello there! Boy, what's today?
Hey?
What's today, my fine fellow?
What Christmas Day?
It's Christmas Day! I haven't missed it. The spirits have done it all in one night. Oh, they can do anything they like. Of course they can. Of course they can. Hello, my fine fellow.
Hello!
Do you know the Poulterers in the next street but at the corner?
I should hope I did.
An intelligent boy. A remarkable boy. Do you know whether they sold the prize turkey that was hanging up there?
Not the little prize turkey, but the big one.
What, for one as big as me?
What a delightful boy. It's a pleasure to talk to him. Yes, my buck.
It's hanging in there now.
Is it? Go and buy it.
No.
I'm in earnest. Go and buy it and tell them to bring it here that may give them direction to where to take it. Come back with the man and I'll give you a shilling. Come back with him in less than 5 minutes and I'll give you half a crown.
I'll see you in three.
Look at him go, off like a shot. Oh, I must prepare.
Shaving was not an easy task, for his hand continued to shake very much.
And shaving requires attention, even when you don't dance while you're at it.
Even if he had cut the end of his nose off, he would have put a bandage over it and been quite satisfied.
He dressed himself all in his best and at last got out into the streets. The people were by this time pouring forth as he had seen them with the ghost of Christmas present, and walking with his hands behind him, Scrooge regarded everyone with a delighted smile.
A Merry Christmas, dear sir!
Good morning!
Scrooge said often afterwards that of all the blithe sounds he had ever heard, those were the blithest in his ears.
He had not gone far when, coming on towards him, he beheld the portly gentlewoman who had walked into his counting house the day before and said,
"Scrooge and Marley's, I believe." It sent a pang across his heart to think how this old woman would look upon him when they met. But he knew what path lay straight before him, and he took it.
My dear woman, how do you do?
Oh, my.
A Merry Christmas to you, madam. I hope you succeeded yesterday. It was very kind of you.
Mr. Scrooge?
Yes, that is my name, and I fear it may not be pleasant to you. Allow me to ask your pardon, and will you have the goodness to put me down for a small contribution? Oh? Shall we say £1,000 sterling?
Lord bless me, my dear Mr. Scrooge, are you serious?
If you please. Not a farthing less. A great many back payments are included in it, I assure you. Will you do me that favour?
Oh, my dear Mr. I don't know what to say to such a munificent...
Don't say anything, please. Come and see me. Will you come and see me?
I will. Oh, I will.
Thank you. I am much obliged to you. I thank you 50 times. Bless you.
Oh, God bless you, Mr. Scrooge.
Scrooge? Oh, is your name Scrooge?
Indeed. Ah, you must be the poulterer's man. And that's the turkey.
Hello, turkey. Merry Christmas.
I'm sending it to Bob Cratchit in Camden Town. He shan't know who sends it. It's twice the size of Tiny Tim.
See here, I've got...
Oh, why, it's impossible for you to carry that down to Camden Town, sir. You must have a cab. I'll write the address down for you. Here.
Okay.
Do you see the knocker on my door? What an honest expression it has on its face. It's a wonderful knocker. I shall love it as long as I live.
The chuckle with which he said this, and the chuckle with which he paid for the turkey, and the chuckle with which he paid for the cab, were only to be exceeded by the chuckle with which he sat down in the street and chuckled till he cried.
He went to church and walked about the streets and watched the people hurrying to and fro, and patted children on the head and questioned beggars, and looked down into the kitchens of houses and up to the windows, and found that everything could yield him pleasure. He had never dreamed that any walk, that anything could give him so much happiness. In the afternoon, he turned his steps towards his nephew's house. He passed the door a dozen times before he had the courage to go up and knock, but he made a dash and did it.
Fred!
Well, bless my soul, who's that?
It's I, your Uncle Scrooge. I have come to dinner. Will you let me in, Fred?
Let you in? Oh, it'll be a mercy if I don't shake your arm off. Come here, Uncle.
Dear Fred.
Emily! Emily, it's Uncle Scrooge!
Ebenezer Scrooge's first Christmas Day with his nephew Fred could not have been heartier. Wonderful party, wonderful games, wonderful unanimity, wonderful happiness.
But he was early at the office the next morning. Oh, he was early there. If he could only be the first and catch Bob Cratchit coming late, that was the thing he had set his heart upon.
And he did it.
Yes, he did. The clock struck 9. No Bob. A 9:15. No Bob. He was a full 18 minutes and a half behind his time. Scrooge sat with his door wide open that he might see him come into the office. Bob's hat was off before he opened the door. His comforter, too. He was on his stool in a jiffy, driving away with his pen as if he were trying to overtake 9 o'clock.
Hello, Bob Cratchit. What do you mean by coming here at this time of day?
I am very sorry, sir. I am behind my time.
You are? Yes, I think you are. Step this way, sir, if you please.
It's only once a year, sir. It shall not be repeated. I was making rather merry yesterday, sir.
I'll tell you what, my friend. I'm not going to stand this sort of thing any longer. And therefore, I am about to raise your salary. A Merry Christmas, Bob.
Mr. Scrooge, I...
A merrier Christmas, Bob, my good fellow, than I have given you for many a year. I'll raise your salary and endeavor to assist your struggling family, and we will discuss your affairs this very afternoon over a Christmas bowl of smoking bishop, Bob. Make up the fires and buy another coal scuttle before you dot another I, Bob Cratchit.
Scrooge was better than his word. He did it all and infinitely more.
And to Tiny Tim, who did not die, he was a second father. He became as good a friend, as good a master, and as good a man as the good old city knew, or any good old city, town, or borough in the good old world.
Some people laughed to see the alteration in him, but he let them laugh, for he was wise enough to know that nothing ever happened on this globe for good, at which some people did not have their fill of laughter. His own heart laughed, and that was quite enough for him.
He had no further intercourse with spirits, but lived upon the total abstinence principle ever afterwards, and it was always said of him that he knew how to keep Christmas well if any man alive possessed the knowledge. May that be truly said of us, and of all of us.
And so, as Tiny Tim observed,
God bless us,
everyone.
This is your announcer once more, thanking you for tuning in our small Yuletide offering. It was brought to you with a sincere wish that your Christmas may be a happy one, and with the hope that our retelling of this beloved story may help to make it so. Give thanks for those you have, even your in-laws, and don't forget to set aside a plate of milk and cookies for you know who. God rest you merry, ladies and gentlemen. Let nothing you dismay.
Christmas Carol on the Air was adapted from the Charles Dickens original by playwright Peter Church. The University of Wisconsin Parkside's production was directed by Jennifer Sassman, recording engineer John Costigan, sound designer Eamon Higgins, properties master Killian Keeler, stage manager Scarlett Kinderman, assistant stage managers Jared Lewinsky and Jared Monroe, assistant director Ryan Zirk. The actors, Gabby Ashlin, Cole Conrad, Quinn Didier, Alex Griffin, Catherine Kleinhofen, Colin Kovarik, Matt Rangel, Shane Richland, and Jordan Stanek. To finish out the hour of this Friday morning show, I want to replay for you an excerpt from a memorable morning show conversation that I had some years ago, back in the fall of 2007, with choral music legend Weston Noble. This interview occurred during the year that he spent as interim choral director at Carthage College, as interim director of the Carthage Choir. Before that, he had served with great distinction for 57 years as a choral director at Luther College in Decorah, Iowa, primarily remembered for his work with the world-renowned Nordic Choir.
In the intervening years, of course, many, many tremendous years with the Luther Nordic Choir and other choruses, too. As a freshman, I sang in your oratorio chorus, and I always thought that was kind of intriguing that that you would have that experience of standing in front of the premier choir on campus, of course, but then you would also have this other ensemble with a lot of freshmen and maybe other upperclassmen, not quite so gifted or whatever, and you really managed to achieve similar magic moments. And I suppose that's part of the reality of your career is making magic with whoever you're standing in front of.
And we automatically adjust to what whatever level that magic is going to be by what you know the talent that's in front of you. And so it's amazing, isn't it? When you go to concerts, you adjust to the expectations the minute you understand realities.
Yeah, like if I go to my wife's elementary Christmas concert, yeah. I'm not expecting the Mormon Tabernacle.
No.
I'm expecting just...
But you can be tickled to death, can't you?
Absolutely.
Yep.
I hadn't thought about that. That's an interesting image. Over the years, you have, in addition to your work at Luther with the Nordic Choir, you also did so much work as a clinician all over the country, in which you would step in and step in front of essentially a room full of strangers and work for them, work with them for a fairly brief amount of time, and then it's time to put on a concert. You were especially good at that, and it's not a particularly common gift to have. What do you think it is about you as a conductor, as a musician, that made you so such a good match for those kind of situations?
Where did you dream up these questions?
Well, I've been thinking a lot of these for a long time.
Well, you know, the answer is going to be a little deceiving, maybe. If you are not willing to be vulnerable, in other words, to be open and to be free to express how you feel and who you are, any teacher has to be vulnerable. They have to open themselves up to the student. And if you don't have that, and then in that vulnerability, when they see that, if you can find as quickly as possible that magic moment, oh, hey, this is going to be pretty good, you know, and their eyes kind of open up a little bit and they sit up a little bit straighter. And I said, now see what your potential is. This can be an exceptional group. And if you can get that as fast as you possibly can, then they're pretty much with you.
Mm.
Then you see if the rehearsal is going along and I point to somebody and I'll say, you look like Greg Berg. Boy, you're impressing me the way you're singing. I can't hear you, but I can see you. Now, Greg, will you please come up front and sing for the choir? Why, the choir gets as still as mice and Greg breaks into a cold sweat and sings. But that's individuation then.
Right.
You make people feel important.
Sure. Well, and it's so funny how the other people sitting there feel like it's happening to them too, or it could happen to me next.
Yeah.
And the way that engages your level of attention and focus, it's incredible.
Oh, boy, I hope that I'm not next. I hope I'm not next. Then once in a while, they'll come into the department secretary, and they'll say, Luther, they'll say, doesn't Mr. Noble have confidence in me? How come he never asked me? But it takes a while to get there.
Right, yeah. It starts to become a badge of honor to be brought up front and singled out. Over the years, of course, Nordic is part of a rich tradition of wonderful choirs at various Lutheran colleges. And certainly among students, people like to create all kinds of rivalries in their minds. I never got that sense. I always have had the sense that you deeply appreciated the legacy of other great choirs at other great colleges. Can you just talk for a moment about the kind of relationships you've tried to foster with your counterparts, with your colleagues at other schools in front of other choirs?
Perhaps some of that is the fact that I came to Luther as a Methodist. And I was not, and I wasn't Norwegian either. So I stood in awe of this Lutheran mystique, you know, in music. And there is one. There's just no question about it. And so not having grown up in it and formed preconceived ideas or known alums that went to the other Lutheran colleges, I came in as like a little baby, so to speak, you know, and kind of grew with it and stood in awe of what the other schools were doing. And boy, of course, it made me work harder to try to keep up with the Norwegians, so to speak.
Choral legend Weston Noble